Welcome, 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 Wahoo fans, to this week's edition of the Lockdown featuring T-Cove and the Ball Hawk. Special guest this week, the man, the myth, the legend, Heath Miller is in the building. What's good, family?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Hey, oh, man. Thank you happy for to have us. Him. Oh, man. For sure. For sure.
No, Heath, a lot of... Go ahead.
Heath, I'm going to you.
Can you hear us, Heath?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay.
Okay. What, how things been going for you?
Everything's going well. Everything's going well. Thanks for asking. Busy with family and just trying to enjoy life.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt, man. I know that the kids are keeping you busy, man. How many kids you got?
So we have four kids, ages 13 to 8.
Oh, yeah. You busy, busy.
Yeah, we're coming to the busy time for sure.
Any athletes among the group?
Uh-oh.
We're trying to figure it out right now.
he being modest, man.
They all like to play ball. And, it's pretty fun and cool to watch them compete and grow and learn all the lessons that we were able to learn as athletes. And so it's fun to see from this point of view.
That's cool, man. That's cool. All right. Well, you know, we're going to just take you back, man. Let's go a little stroll down memory lane. We're going to take you back to Honaker High School in Swords Creek, Virginia.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So take it back to those days. Now, I know you were a quarterback, and as Hawk, I always tell Hawk, every great athlete was a quarterback at some point. So, you know, us great athletes, we got to hang.
Never
together.
Played quarterback, Heath. Not if we had to throw the ball. I handed it off when I was young.
Running through it. Running quarterback.
Yeah, by default, because I couldn't throw.
So, yeah, talk a little bit about high school, man, a little throwback. I mean, you know, you were All-State Player of the Year, your senior year, and yeah, talk a little bit about what led up to that.
Well, you know, I grew up in a small town in Southwest Virginia, and, Honecker High School was great to me. It was one of those towns where the whole community was behind the athletic events. So Friday night, you know, the place to be was the football field, and, it was a great experience. You know, I remember games from high school as much as I remember games from UVA and games from Pittsburgh. So, it was a beautiful experience. And, I was a quarterback. So I was like 6'5", 225. I think my center was like 5'8", maybe 230. So my squat was really low to get up under my center in high school. It was funny to go back and look at it. But, it was just a great experience.
What was your description coming out of high school as a quarterback? Were you a pocket passer? Were they labeled you as a dual threat? Do you remember?
I don't remember, but we did run. I mean, we ran the option at my school, but, the athletes are a little different down there. So I don't think I was outrunning anybody when I got to UVA. Maybe I was a dual threat high school quarterback.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I mean, you were 6'5", 220. I mean, ain't nobody going to try to tackle you, Heath. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah, I just try to run people over if I couldn't run by them.
Yeah, no doubt. And you had a little baseball prowess, too, I see. And he was a hooper, Hawk, so you know we got to ask the question.
Oh, yeah. Heath, were you a hooper or just a football player wearing basketball shorts?
In all honesty, I was a football player wearing basketball.
I knew he was going to answer like that because he was very modest.
I could rebound. I could play hard defense. You know, my range was probably the free throw line. So
okay,
that's your answer gotcha. Right there.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great range right there. The mid range assassin.
Yeah. So free throws are 50-50.
Okay. All right. We'll take that though.
You understood your role. I could have a dude understanding their role on my team. They ain't gonna try to do too much. They're gonna do what they do.
Yeah.
Right. Indeed. And baseball. Tell us a little about baseball. You were, first team all region and all state.
Yeah, baseball was it's something I played from small. So I enjoyed when I grew up. I liked anything with the ball. So whatever season it was, that was my favorite thing to do. And I went to a small enough school where I could participated in all three varsity sports at the highest level. Yeah, I mean, it was great. It was fun to do that. And, you know, great memories for those sports too.
Now, do you miss baseball practices, Heath? Because a lot of people that don't play baseball don't realize baseball practice don't have a time limit.
When it gets dark, that's when it's over usually, right?
Baseball practice is about 3 hours because it's so technical, you know. Yeah. You'll be doing the batting cage, you bunting, you shagging balls. Yeah. Like, it's so cool. Many intricacies and so many skill sets you got to sharpen. And then running poles on the outfield.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was the worst.
Yeah.
Baseball conditioning was the worst, I think, conditioning of all the sports I played.
I agree.
But yeah, we didn't have lights at our field, so we knew it was over when it was dark, at least. So
okay.
There was an ending point that we could wait for.
Nice.
Interesting. So when it came time for recruiting for college, who found you down in the sticks?
So, you know, I don't know if they still do this, but back in the day, like Virginia Tech and Virginia, every year one of the coaches would stop by the school. So I'm assuming they probably stopped by almost every school in the state. You know, like if coaches are assigned to recruit Southwest Virginia would swing by our school. And, you know, to credit to my high school coach, he was really selling me hard. Like, hey, I think I got a guy you might like. And, you know, they would just say, come to camp. So I can't remember. I think UVA had already offered me a scholarship the spring of my junior year. They came to watch me play basketball that winter and then offered me in the spring. And then I came to camp that summer. And yeah, I committed before my senior season. And Virginia Tech, we went to Virginia Tech's camp as well. And it was right after they went to the national championship. So they wanted me to come, but they're like, we don't have room for you right now. But if someone fails out, we can slide you in. And but I just chose Virginia and went from there.
So happy you made that decision.
I think it worked out pretty well. I'm glad I did too.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. So how was it when you first got the grounds, man? You know, we ask guys a good question sometimes, like, hey, did you feel like you were ready as soon as you arrived and stepped on campus? Or did you see the guys and you're like, okay, these guys are big, fast, strong. You know what? I might need to marinate a little 1 year, or you know what? I think I'm ready to jump in and get it going right now.
No, I wasn't ready. And I knew I wasn't ready coming in. So I was a quarterback, like you guys said, and Coach Groh had taken over. So they were installing the West Coast NFL offense. And I'm coming from high school where, you know, I don't even read defenses. I just got one guy looking at it. If he's open, I throw it to him. If not, yep. I pull it down and run it. So I'm, and you know, the few reps I get, I'm having a hard time just spitting out like the play calls, the formation, the motion, the play calls. And then I got to remember like the cadence. It's not like down, set, ready, set, go anymore. It's like, you know, blue 80. I got to send guys in motion. So my head was spinning the first year. Mm. And at some point during that time, I started filling in for scout team tight end. And side note, I also came in with Marcus Higgins.
Yep.
We know him. We know him.
Yep.
You guys know him. So yeah, Marcus and I were roommates at the Cav Inn that first year, and I saw him throw a football like first practice, and I'm like, ooh, I don't know if I'm ever going to get to play here. That little guy chucked it like 65, 70 yards, like it was nothing. And I'm like, I don't know if I can't do that. So, but anyways, so I'm like, you know, tight end could be all right. At least at the worst, I could play special teams. And people from back home could see me on the field. You know, because they were all following me. Not a lot of people went to play Division I football for my school. So, you know, I kind of felt like, you know, I wanted them to see me on TV and not like, oh, he went to Virginia. What happened to him? You know?
So, yeah.
Had some coaches in my corner and, you know, things worked out.
I want to back up real quick because I want the people to realize this. Our coach got him. Our coach, Christ, got Heath Miller here. Okay. Al Groh coached him. But with that being said, which coach on the coaching staff was your point of contact that recruited you? Like, was it like Coach Smith or
So,
remember?
Yeah, it was. It was. He recruited. He was a defensive line coach at the time with Coach Welsh. Ty Smith.
Yep, Ty Smith. Yep, Coach Smith.
So, Coach Smith came down and watched me play basketball, and he recruited me from there. And then only time I talked to Coach Welsh was when they offered me a scholarship. He got on the phone and said, we're going to offer you a scholarship.
How'd he say it?
Yeah.
Hey, hello. Hey, Heath. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a quick conversation, as you can imagine.
Yep.
Very quick. But yeah. And then when I committed, Coach Welsh then decided to retire following that season.
Mm-hmm.
And I only had, you know, I wasn't really being recruited anymore because I told everybody I'm going to Virginia, you know, people that called.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of looking around like, I'm not sure what I do now. Hopefully Coach Gro, you know, upholds my scholarship or else I don't know what would have happened. But fortunately he did. And he was great for me and my career.
Awesome. I just wanted the people to, you know, to know that Coach Walsh, because you said you were limited to just one read and go and you ran some option. That's where Coach Walsh came from.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. So yeah. I'm forever indebted to Coach Walsh for giving me the opportunity to come to Virginia and, you know, his staff. So, yeah, I owe a lot to him.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome, man. So, you know, you burst onto the scene. You're feeling a little shaky, but then you jump out that first year, you know, 33 receptions, 327 yards, 9 tutties, 9 and 1 tutty pass. I mean, come on, bro. You know, for somebody who didn't think they were going to get on the field, you got on the field in a big way.
Yeah, well, I had 1 year, my redshirt year. But, yeah, then my redshirt freshman year, there was an opportunity, and I just tried to take it and run with it. And, you know, while we're on here, Coach Andy Heck, this is how things just work out. But Andy Heck had just retired. He played in the NFL for 10 years, I think. First-round pick out of Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to get into coaching, so Coach Gro said, come on, you can be a GA. And, you know, you guys know a lot of times the tight end position, they don't really have a coach on college staffs because of limitations. So it's like, maybe we can hire this good recruiter. He can coach tight ends, or we can put this young guy with the tight ends. And, you know, it's kind of like the forgotten position.
Yep.
So for me to have Coach Heck, he kind of saw me. He's like, hey, you're going to be a great tight end. You're going to be a great tight end. He was holding the cards for the scout team. So he was encouraging me to just jump in and get reps. And so he met with me every Friday. If you redshirted, you had to come work out. That was it. Like, Coach Gro didn't want you at walkthrough meetings. Like, you were done for the week. You just had to get a workout in.
Wow.
Wow.
So I would get my workout, then spend the rest of, like, Friday afternoon just meeting with Coach Heck. And he would spend that extra time with me every week teaching me how to play. We would watch my reps from scout team and practice. And so he really built me from the ground up, I would say. Mm-hmm. And he was a perfect coach. And now he's the offensive line coach for the Kansas City Chiefs. So, I mean, I got great coaching from the very beginning when I was just learning the position. So, you know, I don't think I would have been the tight end that I was without him, no question.
So he actually pitched that to Coach Gro.
I don't know how it went down, but he was pitching it to me way before Coach Gro even.
Okay.
You know, Coach Gro might not have even known my name at that point, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to film sessions and then I'm pretty sure, I mean, you know, they know, but.
Right. And then, you know, throughout, like, the defensive coordinator would be like, hey, you're doing a great job. Keep it up. And just some encouraging words, because the other offensive coach wasn't really seeing, you know, what was going on the scout team. So Biscuit was the quarterback. I was tight end. Some of the other freshman class was over there. And we kind of, you know, we were kind of making a name for ourselves on that side.
Y'all was giving them hell. Go ahead and say it.
We were doing our hell. Yeah.
Love it. Love it. Love it. So, you know, that first year, man, everybody, you have arrived. And then you follow that up in 2003 with 70 receptions for 835 yards and 6 touchdowns. Dude, second team All-American, first team All-ACC. Yeah, bro, it clicked, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I've been fortunate my whole career to play with some great quarterbacks. And, you know, that's when Schaub, I think he might have been the ACC player of the year that year, maybe. He kind of took over the starting job my first year and then just broke out the next year.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, we had Coach Bill Musgrave was the offensive coordinator, and Shabby was the quarterback. And so, like I said, I was benefiting from those guys and just trying to make the most of it.
Yeah, y'all had a nice squad because Billy came back your racial freshman year, right? He was still there.
Yeah, B-Mac was there my first year. Yeah, so he caught a ton of balls that year.
Yeah.
And my sophomore year, I think he left, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe he was. Maybe that's probably why I caught as many balls.
I mean, your redshirt freshman year, bro, like, you just got in the end zone, like, every game. Like, so you started a new position as a redshirt freshman. And the tight end position then was, like, just that extra extension of offensive lineman that can move the chains. But you were getting in the paint. You were putting points on the board. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us, like, what was the one route that you knew, like, all right, when they call that, I'm good with this route versus these other routes when you first started learning the position?
Well, the easiest route was over the ball. And I probably caught a ton of those. We just called it OTV.
It's a spot, right? A spot route.
Yeah. So if it was zone, I know Chavez is going to put it on my chest and I can catch it and turn it upfield, you know, 7-8 yards every time. So he was just so quick with his decision. Once he saw the linebacker split, he was hitting me, putting it on me. So, I mean, that was the easiest one for sure. Yeah. And being a quarterback, you know, I didn't really know a lot of details of my routes because, like I said, I was being coached by an offensive lineman. So we spent all of our time blocking.
Mm-hmm.
So the passing game, I was just kind of playing backyard football, so to speak, and just trying to get open. And fortunately, the quarterback.
And that just speaks to a lot to you and Coach putting that time in, because I'm pretty sure when he's moving you to tight end, he's making sure all else fails, we're going to make sure you know how to run block. You know, running comes first. So to see you excel and you were still, like you just admitted to, being very green, just speaks volume to just your natural feel for the game. And then, as you said, with Shab's decision-making, just trusting, like, did you guys have, like, little discussions where he could just say, hey, if you see this, like, if I see this, hit this spot and things like that?
Maybe as my career progressed, but, you know, it was so, you know, learning a new position, everything was coming so fast. I just think I was just trying to remember what I was supposed to do. I wasn't thinking about what defense was playing. Like, if I got a 10-yard in, I'm just going to go 10 yards and come in. I don't know if it's inside leverage, outside leverage, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to be at the right spot. And, you know, I knew Shab could throw me open, and he did so many times that first 2 years. So.
And that came from, and I know Cub got a question. I think that your basketball background played a role in that, mm-hmm. because you knew how to increase your catch radius by, hey, I'm going to put myself between the defender and the ball. And you probably knew how to shield guys naturally from, you know, rebounding and boxing out.
Right. Yeah. I think it was just something that I did without even thinking, like you said, mm-hmm. just from playing ball from I could walk growing up.
Yeah.
That's all I like to do. So I guess it paid off.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and you're right, man. It matters having a quarterback. It truly matters. So that was a blessing. We all know the lean years that we've had. You know, we had that probably about a 10-year period, man, where we struggled, you know, at the trigger position, and it impacts your football big time. And so to be able to have Matt Schaub and then to have Marcus Hagans follow that up, it was great. And then were you concerned at all when Matt was leaving after 2003? And then, you know, with, even though you and Marcus were close, were you concerned at all about having a new quarterback and being able to have the level of production that you'd had the previous year?
No, I wasn't concerned at all. I was you know, I was happy that Schaub had a great career and was drafted, I think, third round to the Falcons. But I was just excited for my friend to finally get his shot, because I knew how hard he had worked. I watched him, and I know how good he is because I see him in practice, and he had gotten opportunities to play receiver and return punts and kicks throughout. But, like, I knew how excited he was for his opportunity, and so I couldn't – I just didn't want to let him down. That was my thinking, and I think everybody on the team felt that way about it too. Like it's going to be Biscuit's show now, and we got to show out for him and be there.
But what was it about Marcus Hagans that had you feeling like that?
Well, I think our whole class was pretty tight. Our whole freshman class that we came in with, and you know, we all just—I mean, we just had a bond, and we loved each other still to this day. But we played for each other. We really didn't have an ego, to be honest. We just wanted to kick people's butt, and you know, we enjoyed doing that. So that's just what, yeah, that was it for us. And you know, we didn't care who got the credit. And so I just think that was a special bond that I think, you know, it's one of those amazing things about the game of football that, you know, I'm sure you get these bonds in other sports too, but football's special to me in that regard. Yeah,
absolutely.
I always say football is the greatest team sport that's ever been invented, man. Yep. You know, just for kind of the reasons you just intimated, man. There's nothing like the locker room. When it's over, there's nothing you can do to assimilate that locker room. And just the bonds. I mean, yeah, I'm sure basketball players and baseball players are tight, but there's just something about the team aspect. You know, I think no other sport depends on their teammates as much as football. And, you know, and when you have 11, you know, on the field at one time, man, it one person can't do it. It's just not that kind of sport, you know? So the bonds that you create, yeah, man, they tend to be lifelong. And so, yeah, to your point, I couldn't agree more. So, you know, that your last year in 2004, you guys had a really successful year. You started out hot. I mean, you guys were 5-0 heading into Florida State before, you know, taking one on the chin down there, winning the next two, then losing two out of the next three. But you went to a bowl game that year versus Fresno State. You were All-American, first team All-American that year. What were your thoughts about that specific 2004 team and the bond that you guys had? What made it special?
I think just collectively, like I said, our class was I'm sure everybody's class feels this way, but you know, we really felt like this was our time. It was our team. And we were now like, you know, if you played your freshman year, you were a senior. If you didn't, you were a redshirt junior. Mm-hmm. So this was kind of our team. And, you know, we had been building, and every year Coach Grove was doing a great job of bringing in like top talent right after us. And so we, you know, from Coach Grove, you know, Coach Welsh left the program in a great spot, but we just felt like we were on the rise. And, you know, it was our chance to do something. And like you said, we started out really well, and we dropped the one to Florida State and a couple close games after that that we should have, you know, that we lost. But I still think that was, I mean, we had a lot of talent on that team and very proud of how we did.
What was your most memorable game at Virginia?
I probably when we beat Virginia Tech at home my sophomore year.
Okay.
Probably. Yeah, I would say so. That was always special to me because I felt like, yeah, I always wanted to stick it to the Hokies.
You know, it's just hard not to want to do that, you know?
Yeah, we all do.
I can say that, right?
No doubt. So when the season was over, NFL Combine, and, you know, coming off a first team All-American, winner of the John Mackey Award, things are looking real strong for you as you're heading into the draft. Did you have any inkling of where you might go as you went into it, you know, after combine, after pro days, and et cetera?
I had no idea, honestly. I played the back half of my senior year with sports hernia. So as soon as the season was over, I had surgery to repair it. And so I did no workouts. So I didn't do combine. I didn't work out the combine. I didn't do workout for the pro days. I didn't work out at all. The question was, I didn't know how that would affect me or how teams would view me, like if that would be a point of concern. I had no idea. Before I took some pre-draft, I went to see the Bucks, Panthers, the Bears, and the Steelers, I believe. But they were all mostly just like medical check, just to check up on me medically. have their doctors look at me one more time, just to, I guess, you know, make sure they felt comfortable if it came to drafting me. So I honestly had no clue. It fell to Pittsburgh at 30, and it worked out great.
Yeah, no doubt. So, I mean, you had an additional year. What made you decide that you were ready to go ahead and make that jump? Did you feel like you'd already accomplished everything you could accomplish at Virginia?
I talked, Coach Heck was a mentor to me all through, you know, for my whole career through the NFL. And he had moved on to Jacksonville for my last year. He moved to the NFL. So, you know, he kind of advised me on that. And then I met with Coach Groh when we got back in town after the bowl game. And Coach Groh was straightforward and honest with me. And you know, he advised me, he gave me advice on what he thought I should do. And, you know, it was all in alignment with leaving. And so, you know, kind of made my decision. I felt that peace when I got, you know, two people that I trusted a lot gave me those words of encouragement. And so it made the decision pretty easy.
When you were coming out, do you remember what the Mel Kiper said about you? Like, as far as what was the weakness of Heath Miller's game that had you like,
I don't know. I can't remember what was said to be honest at the time. You know, just like I said, all the question marks was, I think at the time, at least my agent was Tom Condon. Mm-hmm. And he told me, like, the only other person who had never ran a 40 before being drafted was Peyton Manning. Maybe that was his other client that has never did that. Peyton just said, I'm not running, you know?
Yeah.
So I had my surgeon, drafted a letter to all the teams. It's like, he will be healthy on this date. And it was like a week after the draft.
Okay.
So I was going to be ready to go for mini camps and all that. But before that, I wasn't going to work out at all because I wasn't going to come back and run slow or work out bad when I was still recovering, you know,
right.
In my rehab process. So I didn't know how that was going to work. I was a little nervous. He was telling me it was going to be fine. And, but it worked out. I mean, like I said, it worked out perfectly.
And before you, you know, made a career with the Steelers, who was your childhood NFL team growing up?
So, I mean, there's no teams close to where I grew up. So I like the Chicago Bears. I usually like teams based off of players. So I like Walter Payton. He was my favorite. He was my guy when I was really small. And then after that, Randall Cunningham was my favorite player. So then I like the Eagles.
Yep.
And then as I got into high school and stuff, I didn't, you know, follow a team as closely I did when I was a younger kid, for sure.
Yeah. So when you got drafted by Sixbird, what was that feeling like? They weren't Sixbird then, they were Fourbird.
But yeah, they were. I was just excited, you know, because you're waiting the whole time and, you know, you're like, where am I going to spend the next, you know, where am I going to be in a few months?
Mm-hmm.
I could be anywhere because everybody's telling you, don't get your heart set on one place. Oh, I was drafted. I never even heard from this team and they drafted me or blah, blah, blah. So I'm trying not to read into too much. And, you know, as the first round is winding down, I'm like, you know, after like, I forget, maybe Jacksonville, because Coach Heck and Coach Musgrave were in Jacksonville. So I'm like, okay, I'll go there. They were like mid-20s and they drafted somebody else. And then I'm like, okay, this team's got a tight end. This team's got a tight end. Well, hopefully Pittsburgh drafts me. If not, I don't know. Cause, and then after that was the Patriots, who had drafted Ben Watson, I think the year before. Mm-hmm. So they had a tight end. The Eagles had, they had a tight end. So yeah, I was hoping to go first round, and Pittsburgh was the perfect spot.
Wow. You know, it's just, yeah, I think about your career, Virginia, you were such a blue collar type of dude, you know, and so Pittsburgh just fits you absolutely perfectly. And then you get there and you beat out the competition, you're starting as a rookie in the league. And that ain't easy. That ain't easy, by the way. And then to have a really, really good rookie season with 39 catches, 459 yards and 6 touchdowns. Man, what was that first year like for you?
So my first year in the NFL, to rewind, compared to my first year in college, was like night and day. Okay. So when I showed up to the NFL, like, Coach Girl already ran everything like an NFL team for the last 4 years at UVA. So like even down to like the way the practice was scripted, it was like, oh, this is the same script we do. And, you know, we've been doing at UVA for the last 4 years. Or like the passing game was a little bit different because at UVA, we ran more of a West Coast system where all the hots and all the sights and everything's built in. So the quarterback just knows if he's hot, you don't have to side adjust your route or anything. So that was a bit of something new I had to learn in Pittsburgh. Like I had to learn, okay, I had to be in tune to the protections and the route adjustments and all that stuff. But the running game was all the same. It's basically called mostly the same too. So, you know, I just think, you know, I just had to, the only adjustment was just, and we had such great talent at UVA too. So I'm blocking Darryl Blackstock in practice, who was a second round pick.
Yeah.
My year. Chris Caney was over there, who was a third round pick, played forever. Ahmad Brooks was over there. So we were blocking NFL dudes in practice every day. So sure, the competition was better in the NFL, like across the board, like first, second, third team. Like you're not going to find any drop off. I mean, you're not going to find anybody that you could just push around. So that was the biggest adjustment. But other than that, I mean, Coach Crow just prepared us so well to be ready to play and succeed.
Hey, Cub, what else happened his rookie year?
Yeah, you know, I think he played in this big game. What do they call
it? The Pro Bowl? That game?
No. It's another. It's before the Pro Bowl.
It's a game before the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, it's a big one too. It's like the biggest game. Super Bowl.
You played in the Super Bowl your first year? Man. Yeah. Hold on. Was that Ben Roethlisberger's first year too?
No, it's his second year. His first year, they were 15-1.
That's what it was.
They lost in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I came my first year, we were like 7-5 with we had to win out to make the playoffs. So we won our last four or five games, 7-5. So that was so we'd had to win our last four games. And then we carried that in. We were the sixth seed. We just squeaked in and we just went on the road and beat everybody. We got hot at the right time. We had the talent all along. We just dropped a few games that maybe we shouldn't have. But then we hit our stride at the right time.
Yeah, y'all definitely did. And, you know, for the people listening, Ben Roethlisberger would have never got a championship. You know, it's like Jordan and Pippen.
There you go. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I'm sticking to that right there.
I was going to be a gold jacket when he gets one in a few years.
Yeah, you know, he need to go ahead and shout you out like Mike did Scotty. You know, looking at that team, man, you know, you got yourself. And then it was another unsung hero, a guy that didn't get a lot of fanfare coming out of college, was Fast Willie. How was it seeing just a guy with that type of story having success playing alongside another guy known as the Bus, Jerome Bettis, blocking for those two guys?
Willie was great. He was so fast, and he was the perfect changeup Jerome, because at that time Jerome's feet was always amazing, but you know, he was going to pound it out, and then you bring Willie in, or Willie starts the game, and once Willie sees a crease, he was gone. He was so fast. But for Willie and myself and Ben, that team has so many veteran players who did things the right way and have been in the league a long time. and they had took their lumps, but they were amazing players. I remember my rookie year walking down the hall, you know, going into the Steelers facility, and they have like pictures of the prior year or whatever. And they always had the picture of the Pro Bowl from the previous year. And, you know, it's everybody from the team. It's like, I forget how many, there was like 8 or 9 guys up there. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like, so when I stepped in the huddle, everybody had played together for years. I laugh about it now, but you know, the play's called. I get up to the line and I'm trying to check with my tackle. Like, okay, we got a Trey Block, right? Trey to 51. And the tackle's just like looking with blinders straight ahead. He won't tell me nothing. I'm like, oh, I better learn. I'm like saying what we got, but I'm also like just making sure I'm right.
Yeah. You know? Yep.
But you know, they had a standard, and you know, they were great to learn from. Some like we've got, I mean, three Hall of Famers so far that was on that team. So, and more to come. So, you know, it was a great team to learn how to be a true pro and how to handle yourself. And it was awesome.
And something else happened your rookie year that was iconic, if I'm not mistaken, because I was in Colorado then. That's when the fumble took place, right? Was that when Jerome?
Against the Colts? Yeah. That was, I mean, because Jerome, I guess the 15-1 year Jerome had wavered on whether he was going to retire or not. How many years he had been playing. It was, a lot.
Yeah.
So he knew if he came back, the year before was kind of like an anomaly because he was going to split carries with Deuce Staley that year. And I think Deuce kind of got hurt at some point in that year. So Jerome became the feature back and he rushed for over 1,000 yards, I'm pretty sure. So he was like, I don't know if I got another one in me. So he came back. He knew he was coming back to a reduced role, but he wanted to be that leader for the team. And so the Super Bowl was in Detroit, which was Jerome's hometown.
Mm.
So the rallying cry of the team, and this is how tight we were as a team, was we just want to get to the Super Bowl and win it for Jerome. So, you know, the ironic part of that whole thing was the Colts had beat us pretty good at the RCA Dome in the regular season. And so we came back to the RCA Dome. We had taken it to them most of the game, but at the end, Peyton had scored a couple times and got back into the game. And the whole ironic part was like, we put Jerome in on the goal line because we know he's going to pound it in.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy just put his hat right on the ball. It popped right up in the air. I remember by the time I realized what had happened, I was on the ground. So I was just like, this can't be happening. Like, this can't be, like, of all people to, you know, for that to happen to. But fortunately, Ben made an amazing tackle and
yes,
saved our season in that respect.
Vanderjack, did he miss the field goal or something?
Yeah, he missed. I think he missed a couple field goals.
Yeah, he missed. I remember him because he used to wear like the one armband.
Yeah, cup. But he was like the top. He was one of the best kickers.
He was.
So that's when you like, this is just maybe we're just destined.
Yeah.
One of those games where at the time the RCA Dome was so loud. Like when we played there, we didn't use silent count the first time we went. And I'm on the end of the line trying to block Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis, whose game's built on speed. And I can't hear the cadence. I'm trying to look in and our tackles, they had a good game. So the next time, like if you were on the bench trying to talk to each other during the game, you couldn't hear each other talk, like right next to each other. That's how loud it was.
Wow.
So we used silent count that time. But anyway, I say that because of the excitement of that game. I feel like I was on a roller coaster, like being so high and then them coming back. Their fumble happens. You're like, I can't believe we're going to lose this game. I feel like we've dominated to this point. We're about to put the game away. Now they're driving down to score to win. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it was just mentally and emotionally exhausting. But after we won, I was like, maybe this is just meant to be.
Wow.
Just amazing, man. Just amazing. And it's like, that wasn't the only time you got to do it. You know, it's hard to get there once, but you're like, take a couple year break and then we'll jump back in 2008. I think you got
that first year.
let's just go do it again. You know, I mean, you talking about the standard being the standard. That's kind of, who you guys were. And, I'd love for you to talk about Mike Tomlin, because I have always been a fan of his when he used
to coach. Where are you from, Cuff?
When he 757.
Thank you.
I know. When he coached DBs in Tampa, we lived in the same neighborhood, and he lived a subdivision over from mine and lived behind a good friend of mine. And we'd grill out, and he'd just walk over and come chop it up with us and always invite me to practices and whatnot. And I always was fond of him, and then just watching him grow as a coach, man. I mean, you're talking about somebody that I would love to play for. Tell us what it was like playing for him.
Well, I think when Coach T got hired, he was like 32 years old. I could be wrong.
Yeah, he's pretty young.
He was young. He was the youngest head coach in the league. I mean, maybe ever. I don't know. But you know, none of us had really ever heard of him because he was still young, up and coming. Like, he ascended fast. Mm. From Tampa, I think he was at DC and Minnesota for a year or two, maybe.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Coach Cowher retired, everybody, I just kind of assumed, like, we had two head coaching candidates on our staff. So I thought, you know, that's the way that it would go. And, you know, to the credit to the Rooneys, you know, they saw something in Coach T, and also to Coach Thomas, credit too, when he came in. You know, a lot of guys, when they get hired, they want to bring in all their people, kind of blow the whole thing up. Mm-hmm. Our situation was unique because Coach Cowher retired on his own. He didn't get fired. So we still had a talented team. And Coach Thomas kept the whole coaching staff for the most part in place. And the whole defensive staff. And that was, you know, we were a defensive team.
Yeah.
And so he kept the whole staff. Nothing changed on that side of the ball. And then offensively, it was pretty much mostly the same too. So, you know, that was, I think, a decision that showed his humility as a coach, and not wanting to be like, no, I'm the head coach now. We're going to do it my way. It's kind of like, no, you guys have been good. Let me learn how you guys are doing it. And let's mesh these two together. And he did a great job of doing that. And also challenging, you know, we were an older team, but he had a way of communicating and challenging guys and holding them accountable. Which I could only imagine at 32 years old. You know, I think him and Potsy played against each other in college.
Yeah.
Now he's Potsy's coach. So, I mean, but he's a great communicator. He's a great leader. And, you know, that was evident from day one.
Yeah. And I forgot to ask you, how did Potsy welcome you in, Ben? You know, we know how who's greet who's. So he being an OG and you coming from UVA, how was he when you first got?
He was great. And, you know, he was one of those old vets who had been around that I tried to emulate and learn from my whole career. And, you know, the moment I got there, he had me out to lunch with a bunch of the guys on the team and welcomed me with open arms. And, you know, you can't put a value on having somebody that's, you know, traveled your path, so to speak, and is kind of looking out for you. So that was Potsy for me. So I always think of him, he was our captain, so I always call him captain.
Captain. That's dope, man.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So, you know, now you officially have two Super Bowl rings at this point. Man, you probably couldn't have been able to tell me nothing at that point if I had.
You couldn't tell me nothing after 2005. I won one in my first year, and I'm retiring.
But, you know, you kept the grind steady, man. You know, it was just, you were just a integral part of the makeup of who the Steelers were, you know, a tough, gritty defensive team that was a physical offense that was going to pound the ball. You know, you had a physical quarterback, physical tight end, tough to defend, guys on the outside. Man, you guys had that. I mean, it's truly a blue collar team, you know, and it lasted for so many years. But even now, it's still the makeup of who they are. It when they if they try to get away from that, we wouldn't recognize them at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the beautiful thing about it is it's kind of like synonymous with the city of Pittsburgh itself. You know, the team is a reflection of the city and the values that people of Pittsburgh hold dear to, and that's just being tough blue collar. You know, it's gray there a lot of times. It's cloudy, yeah. Gray, and people are just put their hard hats on and go to work. And you know, they find value in that. I think the team is built around that same, and that comes from the Rooney family. The Rooney family's born and raised at Pittsburgh. They are Pittsburgh. So, you know, to me, it's such a unique franchise. And and that's why it's, you know, it's always one of the premier franchises in the NFL, I think. You know, they're a loyal franchise. Like you said, we were good for so long because, you know, the method was we hardly ever brought in for a big free agent signing. We would bring in pieces from time to time, but, you know, we were going to draft well, develop guys. And if you played hard and you were good by the team, then the team was going to take care of you. And, you know, guys want to play and perform for a franchise like that. So. It was all perfect fit for me.
And you know, during your playing career, you were like that reliable tight end, because you had the new breed right there. Antonio Gates. I mean, Tony G was there before you got there, but you had Rob Gronkowski come in. You got the Travis Kelce's now. So we see those pass catching. And then when I look at the tight end landscape today, I mean, Rob get blocked too, don't get me wrong. And not saying Travis Kelce and them couldn't, but they're known for their pass catching. But when I look at drafts these days, and I always look at drafts, I was asking you about draft comparisons, because your name pops up as with these tight ends who can do both. That's not overly flashy, but are very reliable and big time. How was it for you just being able to stay in your own lane, to be comfortable with that? Because a lot of times players feel like they got to change with the times, because they may feel like they're lost art now. Because, you know, you got 1,000-yard pass catching tight ends now.
Yeah, well,
they fast and big, but you were that guy that was that renaissance tight end that could do everything.
Well, I think, you got to kind of know who you are as a player. And I felt like the more I could do well, the more valuable I would be to the team and the offense. And that was established to me for Coach Groh. Like, Coach Groh, the tight ends were blocking power. We were blocking zone. Like, the tight ends had to block. Mm-hmm. He coached Mark Bavaro up at the Giants, and he's like, that's what I want my tight ends to be like right there. So that was somebody I was like, okay, let me check him out a little bit and see what he was doing. So that's what I tried to be. And Pittsburgh was the same. You know, when I first got there, was everybody was like, why we draft the tight end? We don't throw the ball to the tight end. We don't throw the ball to the tight end too. I'm like, well, I guess I better put my blocking hat on then. So, but at that time, Tony Gonzalez was kind of changing the position a little bit.
Yeah.
He was like one of the few guys. And then Antonio Gates, same thing. He was a basketball player and was a receiver, for the Chargers. And so they were kind of changing the mold of the tight end, where coaches are like, oh, wow, this is a weapon if we use tight ends this way. So, but I knew my value, and I tried to be the best I can in everything they asked me to do. I didn't want to pencil myself in and say, I just want to catch passes. I'm on the field for 50% of the time when I could be on the field 100%. And I just could try to contribute in every way possible.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. What was it like catching passes for Big Ben, man?
Big Ben. Quarterbacks weren't
set. I mean, he was like, I think just raw talent. I mean, probably – throughout my career, I don't know if there's another quarterback that just possessed the raw, tools that he had. And whether it be escapability when he was young, the arm strength, the vision, just the feel for the game, so many times. And this worked great for me, because when he would leave the pocket and extend the play, then I just had to get open and he would find me.
Right.
And, oftentimes we were just on the same page and it was unspoken, but, it was just kind of, just the thing that was natural for both of us. So, like I said earlier, when you can play with great quarterbacks, which I fortunately had from Virginia all the way up, it helps your career. It makes you look good.
No doubt.
It does. I would be remiss if Petty Hawk didn't ask you about a certain individual that Petty Hawk knows, because he played against his daddy. But, at Virginia, we are gentlemen. How was it for you to see the growth and the stardom of Antonio Brown take place? When you look at the great receivers in this league, that 5-year span he had is something that it'll be hard to duplicate. How was it for you being there and seeing him get drafted and just ascending to the level that he got to while he was in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, well, he, when you play a while in the league, and you show up for OTAs, and it's kind of the same thing every year, it's not a lot. So it was always exciting to see, the new talent coming in. And, we would always, you guys would say, oh, my day one is so-and-so, my day one is this, AKA, on day one, I saw his talent, I know he's going to be good. That was the
right. Yep.
Like when a guy's making the Pro Bowl, oh yeah, he was my day one. You know that. So, but from from day one, like in OTAs, like you knew Antonio had a little, he was a 6th round pick, and we had drafted a receiver 3rd round that year too, Emmanuel Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
We drafted both of those guys, and they both were really talented guys. But you know, Antonio just had something. He just had something different about him. Like, man, this guy's like pretty good. Mm-hmm. So the whole, he would run scout team, and he was routing up. I mean, like I said, our defense was good, and he was killing them in scout team through the whole year. So you just knew once he got the playbook down and once he found, you know, his role within the offense that he was just going to be, he was going to take off. But I don't know if I saw him doing what he did, you know,
yeah,
first year, like what he eventually wound up being, which in my opinion was the best receiver in the league for multiple years back to back.
I agree.
It's hard to be considered that 1 year. He was multiple years, and that just speaks to his hunger, his dedication, the way he approached practice. I mean, he's not a big guy, but he made big man catches constantly. Yeah. And, you know, that's just a credit to him.
Yeah, he's definitely a phenomenal talent, and it was fun. We talked about this off air. I played against his dad, touchdown Eddie Brown, in Arena Football League, and his dad is one of the most decorated receivers in AFL history and was a Hall of Famer. So when I got to see Antonio with the Steelers, all I kept saying was he looked just like his dad as far as his route running and his ability. His dad was bigger than him, but it was like deja vu seeing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I said, AB wasn't that – I mean, he was maybe 5'10".
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on a good day.
195, yeah, on a good day. But he played big. He played mm-hmm. huge. And, yeah, I mean, and the connection that he and Ben had too.
Yeah.
And the trust that they had in each other, that goes a long ways, obviously. But, yeah, the run he had was second to none, in my opinion.
Nice.
Wow. So after a third Super Bowl appearance, you guys didn't come out on top that time, but you made it to the big game a third time and a couple of Pro Bowls. You suffer a significant injury, reconstructive surgery. I've been there. I know what that's like. Career, I mean, can you see the light at the end of the tunnel? I mean, after that 2013, after, you know, you came back after, you know, that year, 2014, and what was the genesis of you saying, you know what, it's time for me to go ahead and shut this thing down?
Well, my goal was to hit double digits.
Okay.
And then, like you said, I think it was year 8, I was having a great year, and I blew my knee out with like a game left. So I tore my ACL, MCL, PCL.
Mm.
So that kind of was a smack in the face. Like, I'm 30. I think I was 30, 31 at that point. I'm like, I got to grind out a couple more years, you know. And I think I played year 9, and, you know, the first year back from a knee, I was.
Yeah, buddy.
It was rough. It was because you're not able to practice. You're trying to manage it just to get to the games, and you're still not 100%. But I got through that one. I'm like, I want to get healthy again. And I feel like I played pretty good my last couple of years. But I just knew, you know, the amount I had to put into it just to be ready on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And then not have the payoff that you're used to getting. And knowing that you're not the same player, you're not dominating, you know, like, or playing as well as you're used to playing. I don't want to say dominating, but playing as well as you're used to playing, or being the type of player that you're used to playing, mm-hmm. you know, that was always a little bit tough for me to swallow. So that's kind of when I knew it might be time to hang it up.
You know, and it's interesting that you say that because, you know, those last 2 years, you had 66 grabs and 60 grabs. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So that just tells us and the fans the standard that you set, that wasn't good enough for you. You know, what you wanted to put out there. And I mean, I feel you when you say the process to get back. And when you start not loving the process of it, that's usually the time that you're like, you know what, it's probably time to go ahead and hang these things up.
Yeah. You know, I my last few years, you know, I when you're young, you just show up to practice. Maybe you get a random massage and you're good to go. Like, if you get a good night's sleep and Saturday's a walkthrough before the game on Sunday, you feel like you're good, you know. But then at the end, you know, you're getting treatment at home before you go to work. You go to work, you know, whatever, get treatment at night, wake up the next morning, same thing. And then you get to the game, you're like, man, I still don't feel great. Like, after all, I still don't feel great.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
And you're like, oof. Man, it might be time. But, you know, I was fortunate because of when I did have my knee injury, I only missed like 3 games. So I didn't miss a lot of games throughout my career. I played a lot of snaps and, you know, it catches up to you after 11 years. But to the numbers thing too, it also speaks to the way the game had changed throughout my career with Ben. You know, we were a running team for the first half of my career. And then we started building the team around the quarterback and throwing the ball a lot more. And, you know, and the league in general has started throwing the ball a lot more too. So those passing numbers, go up, you know, the receptions go up, the yardage goes up. And so that's what you're seeing now a lot too.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, man. You had an incredible career. I mean, not too many tight ends, you know, in your from your era have more than 6,000 receiving yards. So that's pretty big time, man. And I know it meant a lot for you to get inducted to the Virginia Sports Hall of Fame. Tell us a little bit about what that meant to you.
That was cool. Totally out of the blue. I knew that there was a Virginia Sports Hall of Fame, but, you know, when I got the call, I was like, this is really cool. When you really take a step back and think about the people from Virginia who went on to do amazing things, not only in the state of Virginia, but NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, NASCAR, yeah. I mean, you name it. And, you know, to receive that honor was, you know, very humbling and, you know, very cool for me at the same time.
Mm, yeah, that's awesome, man. You know, we're just so proud of your career, man. And the things that you do in the community to help others, man. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the community work that you do?
Well, for right now, I'm just, I'm a community coach.
So. You're not lying.
Yeah, you know, I have 4 kids and I, you know, you start out coaching the older ones' teams and then the siblings are like, wait, Dad, why aren't you coaching my team? So then you end up coaching their teams and then before you know it, you know, we've waited to do a podcast for I don't know how long. Like a year, right?
we get it, man. We get it.
I think Hawk hit me up last spring. I'm like, oh, it's a bad time right now.
He was like, hey, man, you know, our sons have played against each other and stuff in soccer. So he was like, you know, the spring grind. I was like, yeah, maybe we get the summer. And then the dawn, I was like, oh, it's a down period, you know, at this time.
Yeah.
So we lucked up and connected now. But yeah. I see Heath around, and I saw when his wife was coaching too. My question for you, Heath, is when do the parents realize it's Heath Miller coaching their kids?
I don't know if they do. I don't know if they do. I don't know. I don't know. They don't make a big deal about it if they're excited about it or not. But I find joy in, you know, seeing my kids. They're excited to play. They're excited to learn. And when you have a group of kids that are all like-minded, that's when it's fun to coach. You know, if you're coaching kids that half of them are just there to be babysat or they don't want to be there, you know, that's when it's hard. But, you know, to see enthusiasm and joy. And then as a coach, you know, you're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it to see them have that feeling of improvement and have the feeling that after you win a game or you put in hard work and you see like how much that paid off.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I get. I get a big kick out of that now and a lot of enjoyment of seeing that in kids.
And I know we got to let you go soon, but I'll be remiss if I didn't ask you, how was it for you just paying it back and getting the opportunity to work with Jelani Woods before his draft?
Well, it just was happenstance. I was at practice and helping out with practice a little bit and he was coming back and he had a private workout, I think with the Colts, I believe that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was just like, hey man, do you mind hold the bag for me? So they need somebody to hold the bag for the workout. And I was like, yeah, whatever you need. And
you can't make this stuff up.
So that's the way it was. That's how it worked out. And so I can't take any credit for Jelani. Jelani's doing great. I watched him play against the Steelers this year, some of that game, and I think he was eating them up for a while. Yeah,
he was, man.
Yeah, he kind of a breakout game for him. So I know he'll continue to build on that. He's one of those, I mean, his size, that's what I was like taken aback by. I'm like, this guy is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so any offense that he's in, they can utilize that. And he's got good hands and he's fast. So I'm excited to see where his career goes from here. But he had a great, great rookie year for sure.
Do you watch a lot of pro football now that you retired?
I mean, I watch it. You know, I know what's going on, but I don't watch it. I mostly watch it because my sons are interested in it.
Okay.
So if we're home on a Sunday, you know, and he's not playing baseball or whatever, have something else, then they have a game on for sure.
Yeah, so, you're definitely at home on a Sunday for soccer, though. You're not. So I already know.
Yeah. Well, my oldest two retired from soccer. So they
both
retired already.
All right.
So we got the two younger ones that's still playing. But I follow football for sure. And, I'm at the point now. I'm just a fan like everybody else. I'm not tied to anything.
There we go.
There you go.
Yeah. Just enjoying it.
Hey, I get it, man. I get it. Well, Heath, man, it's just been awesome to have you, man. And before we get you out of here, we usually end our session with something called Shut the Hell Up, I'm Underdog. And what that is something that gets under your skin that just really annoys the heck out of you. But you're like, you know what? I'm going to overcome it. I'm going to be all right. Holla at us.
All right, so I'll keep it football related. So, and this is coming from an offensive guy, so maybe you guys can help me understand this. But when a defense gets an interception or a turnover, and they're down by like three touchdowns, or you know, they're losing bad, and they run down in front of the camera and they do the pose or the thing, like I'm like, or you know, like. If it's an incomplete pass, but you got burnt and the quarterback just overthrew the receiver, but you still do your arms, you wave off like, no, not on me today. That's my maybe you guys can help me understand.
Man, you know what, Cub? This is the first time, I guess, ever been petty towards us.
Yeah.
But Hawk, you're half with me. Hawk's half with me. So you got to take my side on this.
Yeah, there we go. So we're going at you, Cub. We're going at you.
You know, it's funny. I think that the game it has such advantages for the offense that I think and defenders don't get shined much. And so if there's any chance, I don't care if it's an incomplete pass, guy was beaten, he waves it off. they're going to celebrate just no matter what. Cause I'm like you, Heath, I always laugh. I'm like, you guys are losing by 28 points. I don't care if you intercepted it. Why? You need to just intercept it and hand it to the ref and be like, all right, come on, offense. Let's go so we can get back out here and so I can get another one. But, I'm right there with you. I don't get that one either. So
and look, I'm not anti-defense by any means because the rough and the passer calls and stuff like that. I'm with you guys. I'm with you guys on that.
That was great, though, Heath, because a lot of fans always ask me, like, Hawk, why do y'all celebrate an incomplete when y'all didn't do nothing?
Yeah.
I said, look, me personally, if I was checking somebody and it got overthrown, I'm immediately looking at the safety, even though it was my fault. Hey, man, help me out. Give me the appearance that it was your fault because I just got beat.
Yeah,
dude. So they can say on the telecast, I think Hawkins was looking for some help over the top.
There you go.
A blown coverage.
Yes. Dude. Just like if we drop a pass, we're going to be like the lights or you got to hit me right here.
Man, look, when I'm watching it myself, Heath, and a guy's beat and the pass is underthrown, overthrown, and he jumps up waving his arms, I'm like, dude, your ass was fried. You better be thankful that pass was off target.
They're probably coming right back at you. You better get ready.
Exactly.
Yep. Well, they took the little marker on the call sheet. Coming right back to
coming them. Right back. Mental note. Mental note. Well, Heath, thank you so much, man, for taking this time with us, man. It's been awesome.
Hey, same to you guys. I'm glad we made it happen.
Yes, absolutely. Sir. Absolutely. Well, this has been another edition of The Lockdown featuring T-Cove and the Ball Hawk and former Super Bowl champ Heath Miller. Until the next time, we are out.